Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 2nd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, there is a Senate deal on the proposed average crop revenue program. A Hoosier lawmaker says the nomination of Ed Schaefer comes as a shock but should not block the farm bill. And USDA says the average value of farmland nationwide is up 13%. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then later in the program, we'll hear from University of Illinois Extension ag economist Daryl Good. It all happens on this Friday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
In Chicago, on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat settled at $7.78.5, up a quarter. March futures down three quarters at $7.99.5, and the May at $7.69, a penny higher for the day. July futures for next year, $6.70, up 7.25. The September futures in the wheat pit for soft red at $6.80.25, up 7.25. December wheat in Kansas City at $8.06.25, up 1.75 for the afternoon. December corn futures up 8.25 today at $3.77 in Chicago. March at settlement price at $3.94.5, up 8.5. And the May futures up 8.25 at $4.04. July futures for 13.5 a bushel, up 8.75. And September's at 4.19.25, up 9.75. December contract for next year at 4.25.5, 8.75 higher for the day. May futures, rather March futures for 2009 at 4.32.75, up 8.75. November soybeans at 10.01.75, up 11. The January's at 10.16.75, up 10.25. The March at 9.25 higher, settled 10.31. And the May futures at 10.35.25, up 9.75. July 10.40, up 7.5. And next year's November's at $9.68.5, up 9 cents in the bean pit. December bean meal at 2.74, up $1.90. December bean oil at 42.64, up 57 on the afternoon. Numbers from the Mercantile Exchange for the afternoon, not available at the moment, so we'll check in on the outside markets to see how those things are doing for the day. December crude oil at $95.80, up 2.31 for the afternoon. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 13,488 is down just about 80 points at this hour. Now the Mercantile Exchange numbers are available. December live cattle at 94.72.5, up 62.5 cents. February's up 60 at 97.60. November feeder cattle at 108.35, down 27.5. The January's 37.5 lower at 107.92.5. And December lean hogs at $52.42.5, 17.5 cents higher on the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Chuck.
Good afternoon, Todd. What a nice, interesting day it was again today.
It was a beautiful day. I take it you're all done with the combining at this point and have quite a bit of nitrogen on. Is that right, or have not started one of the two on that?
Got done with our harvest last week, and then we're doing some field work and fertilizer and things like that starting to go on. Looks like next week will kind of cool off, so some guys are waiting for temperatures to drop for that nitrogen application.
And what are you hearing about anhydrous ammonia and what the costs are?
The highest we heard this week was $630, and the guy that heard that decided he wasn't going to willing to pay that. So it's kind of a cat-and-mouse game. As the new supplies come in, they always seem to be higher, so some guys are starting to kind of pull back and say, well, we'll watch those bean prices and maybe switch those acres over to beans.
And that leads us to the Chicago Board of Trade, where it has been a cat-and-mouse game. You don't know whether it's going to be up or down from day to day, do you?
It seemed like, talking to the guys in Chicago, the turnaround today, Todd, was caused by the Informa numbers that came out and kind of mirrored the FC sound of lower yield. So that was a catalyst that got things going. Also, we saw, you know, the crude oil up again sharply, so that also seems to run in tandem with the grains.
What are you hearing on those numbers, and what do they look like at the moment?
Well, it seems most of the folks out there on the corn side are going to drop down at least a bushel or so. Bean side, I know FC Stone seemed to be a little bit higher and Informa lower. I think this is a crop that's hard to tell, though, Todd. As we got out there into the fields, you know, there were some really good yields, but then on the lighter soils, the yield was probably below average. So, you know, a tough crop to call. But I think another point to be made here, even if it's 152 yield or 153, that's still a great yield considering the weather we had. So the genetics and everything did hold up, and the crop was pretty good considering what we went through.
Yeah, the Informa numbers came out today at 13.193 billion bushels for the corn on 153.3 bushels to the acre. That's down. Soybean estimate at 2.628 billion bushels, a yield there of 41.8, and of great importance to the farmers here in the Midwest, especially along the river. The president today vetoed the $23 billion WRDA bill, the WRDA. The Water Resources Development Act, and that, of course, would have authorized some updating of the locks and dam systems. They won't be happy with the President of the Republicans for that one, I'm quite certain. Tell me more about what you see in the marketplace over the next month.
Well, I think we've got an interesting situation going on. I think this is a kind of a dynamic market we haven't probably seen since the early 70s. I think the thing to look at here is the value of corn and beans. Even though they're high, when you look at the crude oil price, when you look at gold finally punching above $8, when you look at wheat made some all-time highs this year previous to where we are today, I think it leaves room for maybe the fund money to come in here and still leaves room for corn and beans to move higher. I think the second point to be made that farmers who have put corn and beans in the bin are not going to turn right around and let those go, Todd. They're going to have to be pried out of their hands at higher levels. They're just not going to turn right back around and let grains go, even though the market's higher.
What do you think they should, though?
I think the point we're trying to make to guys is to be flexible. It's a great time. There's enough value in this crop to use some of these options. I think when guys get to a point where they can make some money, it meets their needs to let it go. I don't think we want to be greedy and not do anything here, but it certainly suggests flexibility in our marketing this year is really important.
How do you view those big grain piles that are out there? Will they get moved out quickly, and will that make a difference in what happens with basis in January and February and March? Might it be helpful?
I think so, and everything I was watching here today was came out yesterday was the actual crop harvest progress. And, you know, Illinois and Indiana are well on their way, but you look at Iowa, they're still, you know, pretty far behind the pace. Those piles are certainly going to be used as a tool from the elevators that have those to meet the need. But I think, again, there's a game here that the farmers, you know, they're looking, I think, maybe $4 cash price on corn to let it go. On the bean side of it, you know, we're kind of exceeding $10, so I guess I don't really have a number in mind of what I think guys would let those beans go.
And do they need to wait for the $4 cash corn?
I think it's a realistic number. We've been trying to get guys to let that go, but then buy some call options to replace it. Or if a guy didn't want to let it go, there's some very cheap put options that create nice floors underneath you. I know I was watching beans yesterday, but they dropped 45 cents in a very short time on the opening. You know, guys, if a farmer saw that, you know, it sure made us kind of nervous in here. So good times, but yet we need to formulate some kind of plan and get something going here.
Hey, speaking of that drop, did you make note that that happened only in the electronic trade but not in the pit trade?
Yeah, and I think that points out a valuable lesson here. I think the electronic is taking over the markets. I mean, it's basically, it is the market anymore. The open pit is just not really, and we saw that in the March corn today, the price differences there. So electronic is where it's at. I mean, it's a world market, and the electronic is really full focus of these markets.
Does that make much of a difference to producers, or is it just mostly to the market analyst?
Well, I had a customer today from Michigan call in, and, you know, he's talking about putting orders in or whatever, and, you know, getting a bid offer and things like that. Used to be we were able to call down to the floor and get information and get a pretty good handle on where the market would be. I was trying to explain to him with the electronic trade being so important today, you just can't do that. It just doesn't work like it used to, that contact with the guys on the floor. So electronic is changing the world, but it is the way it is.
Does it make you feel more disconnected as a broker?
Well, I used to be pretty uncomfortable doing it, and I was uncomfortable with it, Todd, but as times have, I've become more comfortable with it. I think it's there. I think it is done a better job of being able to handle those limit-up days and those big moves. If you remember back, we had some real problems with electronic handling those big swings, but we saw that yesterday. It handled it very well. It went 45 lower, and it came right back pretty quickly. So I think they fine-tuned the system. It's getting better.
What's your best set of advice for livestock producers at this point? What do they need to be watching?
Hopefully we can turn that hog market around. You know, it's been one of the weakest markets out there. It's really had a significant break. I think that market can firm back up and come around. Cattle are in pretty good shape. So when hogs get a recovery rally, I think it's probably prudent again to get some hedges going there. Cattle market, pretty decent market right here going into fall. Feeders are kind of weak at this point in time, but, you know, a lot of them coming and a lot of farmers look to pick up feeders here.
Hogs run pretty cyclic. Where are we in the cycle, do you know?
Well, I think we've been somewhat skewed by this massive break. I mean, we do have a lot of pounds, a lot of hogs coming to market, but I think it's overdone pretty much. You know, the other thing that's been pointed out, you know, this ethanol thing and the food prices, but gosh, pork's got to be a bargain in the grocery store and to consumers. I know McDonald's, you know, featuring the McRib, things like that. So I think the demand will come back around to a cheap product and help those hogs out.
Yeah, I saw the McRib sign up. You can tell there's a lot of pork out when the McRib signs come out.
One of the best values, I guess, in the food world right now is pork.
All right, thanks much. Anything else to add before I let you go?
No, looks like for an interesting week next week in that big USDA report, we'll see what the USDA figures the yield is.
Okay, thanks much, Chuck.
Thank you, Todd.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. He's filling in, of course, for Mike Zuzulo today. Chuck, kind enough to step into Mike's shoes for the afternoon. Let's take a look at what's happening in the world of agricultural weather. We'll take a complete look with Steve Hilberg at the bottom of the arm, but we'll get Ed Kieser's two-state forecast right now. He says it's pretty easy tonight, clear to partly cloudy across the two-state region. Lows will range this evening from 30 in some rural locations to 36 in some city centers. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Highs will range from 52 in the north to 62 in the far south. Tomorrow, wind speeds at 6 to 16 miles an hour. The minimum afternoon relative humidity is between 30 and 45%. The extended forecast for the two-state region, generally open weather will continue right through the next week. A cold front expected to move from northwest to southeast through the two-state area on Monday. That front, though, may trigger just a few scattered showers in eastern and southern sections during the afternoon on Monday, but amounts should remain light. Many areas will remain completely dry, says Ed. The front will be followed by windy and much colder weather for Monday evening through Wednesday. High temps next Tuesday and Wednesday, mostly in the 40s. Some 30s possible in the northern locations. Lows will mostly be in the 20s, with Wednesday morning being the coldest. Some of the lake effect rain and snow showers will be possible in the parts of northern Indiana on Tuesday and Wednesday. Dave's now here now with the news.
In agricultural news, senators have worked out a deal on a key provision of the pending farm bill, the average crop revenue program. Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Tom Harkin, Budget Chairman Kent Conrad, Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin, and Ohio Democrat Sherrod Brown have negotiated their differences. Expected now to reach the Senate floor, debate is ACR with two forms of payment, a $15 per acre fixed payment on 100% of acres planted, and a counter-cyclical payment built on the same formula as direct payments on 85% of base acres. The Congressional Budget Office says the adjusted ACR program will save just over $1 billion over 5 years, and those dollars would be earmarked for nutrition. A Hoosier lawmaker says nomination of Ed Schaefer as USDA secretary comes as a shock, but he doesn't expect it to pose problems for the farm bill working its way through Congress. Indiana Representative Joe Donnelly.
I am very hopeful that this appointment will not interfere in any way with the farm bill going forward. We have worked diligently all year on crafting this farm bill. It's a good bill. And so the one thing I certainly hope is that this appointment or this nomination does not interfere in any way with the farm bill going forward. That would create tremendous problems.
Press accounts, however, suggest Schaefer has not always been friendly to agriculture. In 1990, Schaefer created a stir during his Senate campaign when he said federal farm subsidies allow, in his words, lousy operations to continue in business when they should be allowed to fail in a free market. USDA says average cropland values in the U.S. rose by 13% this year to an average of $2,700 an acre. That's $310 an acre more than in 2006. In Illinois, farmland values were on average 15.8% higher and 10.4% higher in Indiana. Higher land values is being fueled by higher prices for row crops. And a Sioux Falls, South Dakota ethanol producer plans to convert an existing 50 million gallon corn ethanol plant to run on corn cobs as its feedstock. Ethanol giant Poet has spent the better part of this summer and early fall testing ways to harvest and store cobs. One method has producers pulling a cob caddy behind a combine where cobs are collected and then emptied into a separate truck. Another method commingles corn and cobs in the combine grain tank where they are later separated. Poet is also experimenting with on-the-ground storage for corn cobs. Poet says producers will earn between $30 and $60 a ton for cobs. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your director of agricultural programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Mark Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to listen to that program right here on the station tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. Or if you can't wait, to tune in tonight on our website at willag.org. Okay, you won't tune in, but you'll download from willag.org. It'll be posted by about 6 o'clock this evening, or you can sign up to have it delivered directly to your computer as a podcast. It's all at willag.org. Don't forget to sign up for our free weekend newsletter while you're there. It's a good one, and you'll get it late Sunday evening. That's willag.org. Well, up next, Illinois farmers, and for that matter, those around the nation, have harvested, as you already know, a record-sized corn crop. And now they've seemed to manage to put that crop away for the winter. As you'll hear, it may all mean the continuation of higher corn prices. The last time corn farmers were faced with such a large crop, and it was dramatically smaller than this year, was in 2004. There were huge grain piles back then, like today, but some key differences that should keep the price of corn strong this year, right on through the winter months, says University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good.
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the numbers in Illinois, for example, we did have a record corn harvest. But assuming that we've added storage capacity this past year at the same rate we did in 2006, statewide, our storage shortage was really not as bad as it was in 2004 because we began with much smaller inventories on September 1. A huge harvest, yet as harvest has wound down, we've seen basis levels strengthen substantially. You know, pre-harvest, early harvest, central Illinois, we were looking at cash bids 50 under December. Those are closer to 20 under now and continuing to strengthen. So I think that does speak to the demand situation for corn. Our exports, sales at least, have been very robust. Our rate of movement has not been any larger than last year, but will accelerate in coming weeks. Continued increase in ethanol use of corn. So, you know, you look at the numbers. I mean, we're using 35 million bushels of corn a day in this country, so demand is very robust.
The robust demand probably means the corn piles at grain elevators around the Midwest will be moved out quickly if transportation can be arranged. And that, thanks Darrell Good, should translate into strong corn prices during the traditionally weak months of January, February, and March, when farmers usually are busy emptying bins. There are three reasons. First, corn exports are expected to stay strong through the winter months. Secondly, the market may need to buy soybean acres, and that could cause concern for the size of next year's corn crop. And, of course, the price of energy.
And the third thing will be energy prices, I think. And as long as crude oil prices stay strong, gasoline prices moving sharply higher now at the retail level, I think that means that ethanol prices will recover and that we'll see extremely strong ethanol demand. So putting all that together, it's hard to see corn prices dropping much during the winter months. So I think staying pretty strong.
That was University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good with his thoughts on the price of corn this winter. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
And generally speaking, on a Friday afternoon, we talk with Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois, about the cash grain market. He sounded awfully sad when I asked him if we might be able to skip through him this afternoon and talk instead with Mark Lambert at the Illinois Corn Growers Association a little bit about the veto that President Bush laid on the WERDA bill today. And Mark is on the line with us this afternoon. Hi, Mark. How are you?
Doing well, Todd.
I don't suppose you're in shock because this was something you were expecting?
No. Much like a meandering river, this is legislation that has been kind of cutting its own path and taking longer than everybody would like. We expected the veto, but we also know we have a lot of votes in Congress that we're going to pursue. Rather than take them for granted and make sure we can get this done and override the veto.
Do you think it'll be possible? Do you think that you'll be able to rally enough troops on the ground across the Midwest and certainly across Congress in order to override this?
Well, I think the vote totals prior on this were just overwhelming. So I think that tells us the interest is there and the support is there. But, Washington, D.C. also has a short attention span, so we want to make sure that they're reminded why it's important and that we're paying attention and we still think it's important.
Will it become a partisan issue in the override?
I hope not. As I mentioned, this bill's been dragging on for a while, and as a result, it's got pretty good, nonpartisan support. And, for a state like Illinois especially, it's a no-brainer. We've got a system that's falling apart. That drives our entire economy, and I keep hearing people talk about on our highways, it's like having a huge pothole that we're not filling, and that's basically what's happening with our river system. But there are fewer users, so we have to squeak pretty loud to get attention.
And tell me what the WRDA would have done if the president had passed it.
Well, the goal is to take some major bottlenecks out of the system by modernizing them so they can keep traffic moving a little quicker. And there are several of those. We've got two of them on the Illinois River at Peoria and Beardstown, and there's five of them on the Upper Miss that they want to take those locks from 600-foot chambers to 1,200 feet. Right now, just the delays in tearing those toes apart during heavy traffic season is adding a lot of dollars onto shipping, and it's getting passed straight back to growers.
And a tow would be a barge unit that is actually, 1,100 feet long. Is that correct?
I think so.
They have to cut it in half to get it through,
right,
through the lock.
And not only does it really, it just takes hours and hours. In some locations, it can take some people up to 20 hours between waiting in line and getting through some of these locks. But it also is extremely dangerous. A lot of those things are moving in less than ideal weather, whether those barges move all year round just about. And those crews are exposed to the elements when they're getting out there and they're dealing with the elements and, lashing these things together and tearing them apart. It's a dangerous occupation, and it's silly when, we have the capacity to upgrade these and keep them flowing downriver.
And finally, what will you be asking your membership to do?
Well, we're going to want them to, in Illinois, probably, the message is going to be just to thank them for their support thus far, asking them to hold the line, override the veto, and make sure that we get new locks on our river system.
Mark, we appreciate you taking time this afternoon.
No problem. Thank you.
Mark Lambert is with the Illinois Corn Growers Association, where they're disappointed that President Bush vetoed the Water Resources Development Act today, but they're acting now to override that veto. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg, actually with Jim Angel this afternoon. Right now, it's time for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. The Illinois House has approved a bill to spare schools from financial hardship. That measure authorizes spending about $550 million in additional education money. It passed without an opposing vote and now goes to the Illinois Senate, though there's no guarantee the Senate will act soon. The extra school money was included in the budget that passed over the summer, but lawmakers never approved a technical measure that allowed the money to be spent. That measure has been held up for months in arguments between the House and Senate. Lawmakers say if the money isn't released within days, complicated funding formulas will require the state to cut aid to hundreds of schools. Governor Blagojevich is offering $27 million to fund Chicago-area mass transit agencies and avert massive cutbacks that are threatened for the weekend. The Chicago Transit Authority and Regional Transportation Authority were asking federal authorities for permission for the deal. They would use federal construction money for operations. That money would be replaced with state construction money that Blagojevich is offering. Lawmakers in Springfield say they need more time to work out a bailout plan that would link transit funding to another plan that would build roads, bridges, and schools throughout Illinois. House Democrats wanted to vote on a measure today to raise regional sales taxes to pay for those agencies, but support for that plan is questionable. A series of workshops on the University of Illinois campus takes a close look at India as it celebrates 60 years as the world's largest democracy. A grandson of the first Indian head of state, Mahatma Gandhi, says today's India faces a problem training all of the engineers that its growing economy needs. Rajmohan Gandhi, a U of I professor, says that may provide an opportunity for cooperation with U.S. educators. It'll be a long 2 months before Champaign Public Library users and employees will be able to use and not just look at the brand new $29 million facility going up right next to the old library. Officials are planning an early January opening for the library, which will be three times as large as the current facility. It'll be torn down for an adjoining parking lot. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. We're joined on this Friday afternoon by Jim Angel. He's the state climatologist to take a look at what's been happening in the agricultural weather across the Midwest. Good afternoon to you, Jim.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about weather here in the Midwest. It is just gorgeous this afternoon.
It is. This is about the picture-perfect Illinois fall day. You can ask for better temperatures. In fact, we're pretty much right at normal. Normal for this time of year is highs in the 50s, lows in the 30s. And I think most of the states saw their first fall frost around Monday of this week. So that kind of signals the end of the growing season for the most part. And so I think we'll expect to see a continuation of fairly seasonable-like temperatures and then maybe a shot of rain on about Monday, but not too much. It looks pretty cool and dry for the out for the next 2 weeks.
Dry and cool may be the word we need to keep a lookout on. The highs aren't very high, really, next week, are they?
No, they're not. They're in the 50s, and that's about typical for this time of year. So it's certainly going to be cool. It's certainly jacket weather out there.
Football season, jacket weather, and fall has finally arrived here in the state of Illinois, then.
That's right.
What do you see in terms of how well the Midwest has been doing in rainfall recovery, especially out in the parts of Iowa that were awfully wet early on?
Yeah, if you look out in other parts of the Midwest here, there's still some problems with drought kind of in western Illinois and spilling over into eastern Missouri. Iowa's not too bad. We still have some lingering drought in the Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin area. But all of that pales in comparison to what's happening in the southeastern U.S. Those guys are really feeling the pinch of no rainfall.
Tell me a little bit more about that, please.
Yeah, if you look at especially the area of Tennessee, Georgia, and Alabama, that's kind of the core region of drought there. And so that's a pretty significant agricultural area that's getting impacted by that. So I think we're going to see some of the effects probably farther down the road because it's going to take them a long time to recover. Even if they got back to normal rainfall, it's going to be a long time before some of the crops and may recover from that.
Jim, we appreciate you being with us today.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel, state climatologist from the Illinois State Water Survey, filling in this afternoon for Steve Hilberg, who's away. He's with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Our thanks to Jim this afternoon. Be sure you tune in tomorrow morning for our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture on Commodity Week. That airs at 11:30 a.m. Central Time right here on the radio station. If you can't wait, you can always pick it up early. It will be posted to the website at willag.org by about 6 o'clock this evening. We record the program at 4:30 on Friday afternoons. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.